we have a quorum.
Let's go.
And then so all my members are here. Mm-hmm. Huh? All my members are
yeah,
here.
Yeah, that is true. Let it be noted that the Republicans are all here.
Yes.
Okay, open up the House Committee on Education for March 11th, 2015. And the first thing we're going to do is dismiss Richard to the end of the thing, and we're going to introduce Brian Theitz, who is... He is a committee services intern from the Oregon State University Graduate School of Public Policy. So he's going to be our committee chair for this session and maybe a few others. Okay. What we've got today, we've got a couple of things going. We have public hearings. Today is our civics day. We have public hearings on House Bill 2977, 3387, 2955, and then we have work sessions on two bills, and there's one bill that we're going to need to move, and that is actually we're going to need to move it to the marijuana committee, so we'll be doing that at the end, but we will need a suspension of rules. So I think the first one, I think 2955 we were going to hold till 145.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Yeah, the script, I believe that Representative Wisnant is here for House Bill 2977.
Okay. So that's what I'm going to do. Coming up, public hearing on 2977. Oh, that's what you've got in order. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Representative Wisnant, welcome.
Chair, honorable committee members, thank you for hearing House Bill 2977. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnant, State Rep, House District 53. I've served four terms on this committee. First three, it included higher education and K-12 and community colleges. Madam Chair and committee members, I believe, and it was the 2007-2009 session, I worked with Representative, then became Senator, then now Congress Lady Suzanne Bonamici. On a bills to re-add civics and financial literacy as high school graduation requirements. Back in the old days, before you young people were in school probably, it was a requirement for high school graduation, was civics and financial literacy, or I think called personal financial management. We were unsuccessful. However, Duncan Wise, I think, was chair of the State School Board, and he was able to add civics as a required statewide essential skill. What this means is there are certain things that are not in the curriculum that they want the high school students to demonstrate a proficiency level to graduate. And I'm sure all of the committee members have seen features on TV like the Jay Leno show where they ask people civics questions. Some of the answers are embarrassing. I could quote you, and I have data supporting how bad our civics knowledge is of our high school graduates and even our college graduates. So recently there's been several states that have introduced a requirement that high school students pass the U.S. citizenship test. With my bill, and you're going to hear other bills today which I think state that as a requirement for graduation, I tried to introduce a bill that would have a little less impact, but still maybe achieve what we're trying to do. With my bill, all I did was, in the existing statute, it reads, school districts and public charter schools may implement the statewide assessment system in history, geography, economics, and civics. Okay? All my bill does is take civics out of that list and state school districts and public charter schools shall implement the statewide assessment system in civics and require students to demonstrate the level of proficiency required by the nationalization test required for U.S. citizenship. So it's don't have to pass it. It could be built into the assessment that you can demonstrate your knowledge of civics is what the intent of the bill is. So, Madam Chair, I could go on and on about how important this is, that civics, but I think you get the gist of what I'm trying to do and add the citizenship test into a possible way to demonstrate the efficiency level. I'll be glad to take questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions of the good representative? Well, actually, I have one. Now, is it set in stone that they have to use the naturalization test, or can it be another assessment, or...
Madam Chair,
My
intent was it's just part of it. It could be that you may want to do other things, but that could be part of the program to show your assessment.
Okay.
And I would, I don't want to make a requirement, to make it too specific, but I think it's a good way to see how, to look for the students, see where you need to focus. And it's not just taking that test, but where you're weak on this knowing civics and the American system. Okay. The way it's reads now, it does say require them to demonstrate it. And I think my original intent was just to say that's one of the ways that they can demonstrate, or part of the ways that they can demonstrate their knowledge.
Okay, so it's not necessarily the way, but it could be one way.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Another way or a combination.
Okay.
And I would hope it'd be a combination more.
Okay, Representative.
Yes, Representative.
Representative, you indicated that you had taken the word civic out of the string of things.
And yes.
So how does that make it more, in your mind, does it change what is happening right now? If civics is already on the list of requirements for them to actually cover, then how does this make it different?
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative McClain, it just, again, is a way that I could add the citizenship test into it.
Okay.
It's not taking it away. It's still there. But just to add the fact, because as people are now emphasizing, citizens should be able to pass a citizenship test even if you're being nationalized or you're born that way. Mm-hmm. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Reardon.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for bringing this to our attention. I'm not sure I understand. How would this fit into the schedule? Would it require another class be taught, or is it... And if it does require another spot in the schedule, be concerned about that?
Madam Chair and Representative Reardon, no. The essential skill levels, what that is you have your 24 graduation requirements, or your 25 or 26, depending on the school district. And part of that curriculum, within that curriculum, you have to introduce the subject of civics so that students can write a paper. Right now, to demonstrate that skill level, they could write a paper, do a briefing or whatever. But that is a requirement. The essential skill levels that have been added to your, it's not just your courses. It's not a new course. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's part of the curriculum that you're taking, okay. that would be built in.
Okay.
So it's not new teachers. It's not a new course. It's just part... saying you've already, it's in statute now that you have to demonstrate, the students have to demonstrate a knowledge of civics.
Okay.
And all this bill does is say, hey, by the way, study the citizenship test to be sure you could pass that.
And so it's another avenue.
Yes.
And because my concern, oh, I'm sorry, did you have a follow-up?
I think you're getting there.
Okay. Because I think part of it was, and this is, because we, the good thing and the bad thing about this education committee, the good thing is we have former educators on here. The bad thing is we have former educators on here. And so...
Madam Chair, and that's a plus, and it could be a minus.
Yeah.
That's definitely a plus. But again, it's in statute that they have to demonstrate this some way.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying one of the ways you could partially or in place...
Okay.
It could be this test.
Well, and I think on something like this, because it's already online, they've got practice tests, they've got all these kind of things, so it makes it a little easier. But the question I was going to have is if a student doesn't show proficiency, whatever proficiency is, then what?
I didn't say it was a requirement.
Okay. It's just
for graduation. That's the problem. I think some of the bills you may get today says you have to demonstrate or pass it to graduate, and I don't say that.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what I'm hearing is that they could do it within a history class or a social studies class, and within a math class for the finance piece. And I love this. I think it's great.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's what the assessment thing is set up for. They're not requiring another course to demonstrate the knowledge of geography. It's not one of the required courses. But to come out of high school with some proficiency in geography, you should maybe know how many continents they are. Six.
Okay. Any other questions of the representative? Thank you very much. Now, that is the only, I forgot to have you read it, but that's the only person we have signed up for this bill. But I do have, we have Jan McComb and Andrea Morgan from the Oregon Department of Ed, and they're here for questions, but maybe as a little background, do you have information as to what the social studies curriculum is on civics? Is that something you want to bring forward or not? And then I also forgot to have Brian read what the bill is, and so I will have him do that now.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2977 requires school districts and public charter schools to implement statewide assessment system in civics requiring students to demonstrate level of proficiency requisite in naturalization test for United States citizenship. Declares emergency effective July 1st, 2015.
Okay, thank you. And as I said, we're still in the work session and or in the public hearing, but just if you have some information.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jan McComb with the Department of Education, and with me is Andrea Morgan. Andrea wears many hats at the department, but among them is social science expert and civics expert. And so I've convinced her to come along today and answer any questions about civics. We did forward to you the existing state standards in this area, and they're online, they're posted online, so you can have those to refer to.
Okay.
Representative Wisnett did talk about civics being an essential skill, and I would look to Representative Frederick to correct me if I'm wrong here. The State Board did lay out civics as one of the essential skills, but it has not yet implemented it as a requirement, and so they have yet to pull the trigger on that.
Okay. That's good. Thank you. Are there any questions? Did you want to say anything, Ms. Morgan, or did open for questions, or?
We did have a couple of questions just on the wording of the bill, and we're hoping to get some enlightenment as to what was the intent in terms of the assessment, whether it was just using the 100 questions that the Naturalization Service uses, and Andy has those, or whether it was to create an assessment that included some of the questions but not all of them. I think Andy found out that the answers are posted online, so it's not a secure test. And so it would really depend on, you know, what the goal was in having that assessment.
Okay, and we'll get those answers from Representative Wisnett, because it's a pretty good test, pretty even. So any other questions that the panel might have of the experts here on social studies?
Well, in the document that you gave us on the Oregon Social Science Academic Content Standards, they list both the core standards and then also the grade level standards. And looking at the high school standards especially, do you know, where would you respond in saying that the civics is actually getting the strongest take or the strongest support as far as the particular high school standards that are part of the requirements now? Because we're trying to look to see, you know, what's different between these bills and what we have right now.
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, I will defer that question to Andy. I will say that one of our questions was, at what grade level would the assessment be given?
Okay.
And okay. Chair Doherty and Representative McLean, the
Do you just identify yourself for the record?
Oh, I'm Andrea Morgan, and I'm the Social Sciences Curriculum Specialist at the Department of Education. The standards that you have, again, we have the core standards, which are the description of a prepared Oregon graduate. Mm-hmm. So if you've gone through the entire set of standards, K-12, we're saying that the descriptors as core standards describe what you would know and be able to do. Mm-hmm. And then we have at each grade level the civic standards of what students should know and be able to do to make that progression.
Yeah.
And so as far as the standards and where they get the most emphasis, I think what we see is that a lot of times we see an integrated instruction. In fact, that's what we encourage. So we don't say just take a civics course, because civics usually doesn't just live by itself in the real world. It lives within history. It lives within current events. It lives within all kinds of things. Also, because we have the number of subjects that have to be included by statute, history, geography, economics, and civics, it means with 3 credits at high school, you have to do integration of that instruction, or else you'll never be be able to get through the standards of, that are expected. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of usually the emphasis comes fifth grade, eighth grade, and high school mm-hmm. with civics especially because it's also combined with the instruction of U.S. history. However, you'll notice that we have standards at each grade level because we don't think that it's something that should be just taught maybe in three grades. It is something that's bigger and broader because what we're hoping is that students are getting the willingness to be an active participant. So we want something more than just fact-based teaching. We want the kind of thing where we are teaching critical thinking, beyond, like I say, the fact-based questions that you would find in the citizenship test.
Okay. Any other follow-up questions, Representative Vatt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if it's integrated over time and if they're seeing it fifth grade, eighth grade, high school, why do you think the problem is that we have so many of our children that don't even know what the Constitution is, what it means? They really don't understand civics at all.
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I think that the reason that we're seeing some of this is because of the structure that has happened with the assessments that we currently have. Right now, we emphasize the teaching of mathematics and reading. Those are the federally mandated or state mandated assessments, and science is going to has some mandated assessment as well. But social sciences is not mandated, so we're seeing more schools spending more time. There have even been some studies done where it shows that there's been a decrease in the instruction in all of the social studies. I think it's at elementary school, it's down to about 21 minutes a week. Simply because of the emphasis on these other contents. And so that's of concern. That's one of the reasons. The other thing is I don't know how many of you, and maybe you could take the flashcards that are available for the citizenship test and get the answers to the questions because they're very factual. They're number-based. They're the kind of things that most students now would look up on their phone. Because it doesn't ask about the amendments to the Constitution in terms of the importance of those amendments or what they do or how they affect the students' lives. It just simply asks, how many amendments are there? 27. Okay. You know, I mean, it's
follow-up.
So that's...
Thank you. So I think you're referring to the naturalization, the testing piece. Is that what you're referring to? But we don't do that. And so I guess my question is, we're not doing that. So now is your concern that if we do that, it's just going to be something that kids can look up on their phones? But again, the deeper question that I have is, if we're teaching it now and they're not getting it and we have it, what can we do to ensure that they are learning it? And I understand what you're saying, that math is important and reading is important, but this is also important. And if we're teaching it, so if you're saying that they're not learning it because we're not assessing them, I mean, that concerns me.
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, one of the realities is there's only a certain amount of time for instruction. And so districts are feeling a lot of pressure because it's their reading and mathematics scores that end up on the front page of the newspaper. Their scores in terms of social sciences, even though we have a statewide assessment available, it's optional for districts to use, districts aren't using it. And the other problem is, like I said, instructional time, especially in elementary school, has been quite limited. Now, again, I'm not sure if we're really saying that students don't know this. Do they receive instruction to the standards? I believe that they do, but our standards are more concept-based, and I think that any time you ask students just these number, short-answer, factual questions, you know, that's not what we're wanting in terms of civics. We want engaged citizens. Mm-hmm. So we want them to think about issues. We want them to think about becoming involved. We want them to think about solutions. And the kinds of questions that happen on the INS exam so are not what we're teaching, and they're not what are in our state standards.
This would be my last one. So is it a state standards issue that needs to be addressed, in your opinion?
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, I don't think it's a state standards issue that needs to be addressed. Districts assure us that in their Division 22 assurances each year that they are providing a curriculum that is aligned to the state standards. And I think if we, again, it's, either districts aren't telling us the truth or they really are aligned to the state standards, but the state standards are broader concepts and the critical thinking pieces, not the kind of questions that show up on the INS test and the kind of questions that get asked on the late night talk shows.
Representative Springer, and then we'll wrap up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm looking at the standards here. Frankly, I don't know if I have a question embedded in this or not, but it's probably more of a statement and a little bit of a response to Representative Hack's question. I think we're seeing the bill today, regardless of the intent and what we read into the language. We're looking at the bill today because there's a belief that there is a lack there. And I know, and I get frustrated with the focus on math and reading also in the tests and teaching to the tests, and we hear about that all the time too. But I know my son has sat in social studies classes and an AP history class that wasn't about the tests. And I hesitate in saying this, but I think, and we're going to talk about it, and I'm excited about it, we're going to talk about a bill today that talks about making a greater investment in Oregon Civics Day for teachers. And there's, in every area, there's a lot of great things happening, and maybe there's some areas of improvement. I have seen mock ballots for elections produced in the classroom with mixing state offices with federal offices on the same ballot. That's an issue. That's a big issue. Or unfortunately, and I know that time is a piece of this too, but the teacher nearing the end of their career, and talked them into coming to the Capitol for the first time. And I think the conversation around the investment in teachers to help support this, I think, is very important. I think that there is a gap, and it concerns me. And I'm looking through these standards. They kind of blow my mind away. Looking at the homework I've looked at over the years, kind of blow my mind away. Yep. So there was no question in there, apparently.
Well, and I think one of the things, then we'll finish up and move on to the next bill, is that part of it, and I think you go back, and I've got my teacher hat on, because I taught history and government, and back in the days when they had things like required financial and so on and so forth. And it's just almost kind of human nature. There are some things kids get really, really excited about. And there are some things that they don't. And if you're not really excited about politics or
the Magna
history
Carta.
Or the Magna and anything like that, I mean, I can tell you, I had phenomenal teachers in high school, but don't ask me what I learned in chemistry and physics, because I didn't really like it.
Ask me.
I'm sorry. But some part of it is passion, too, and Andrew, you remember that kind of thing. So, but what we want to do is get that passion for the civics, and I think that's something that's very important.
I know this has got to be quick, and
yes.
So I'm making it quick. I think what I heard from the Department of Ed and from Ms. Morgan was the fact that there is not necessarily one class that teaches civics.
Yeah.
It's a lot more than just history classes. The speech and debate classes, cover at least 9 out of 12 of these items in high school alone. That's just one class. And it's also it's higher level thinking than just a simple number. How many people are on the Supreme Court? If you know that, that's great. If you don't know that, I'd like to have you know what are some of the stances and the positions and the values of the Supreme Court justices. And so I think I appreciated your answer in the fact that civics is taught in an integrated way, and also that it's taught at different levels.
Yeah, that's why we have the fourth graders come down and visit us. Okay, any other questions or comments? Thank you for the information. We'll be around for questions if we have them later on. Anyone else on House Bill 2977? Okay, seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2977 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3387. Brian, if you could read the comments or what the summary is, please.
Requires student, Madam Chair, members of the committee, requires student to demonstrate proficiency in civics to earn high school diploma.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Evans.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, we've been watching the whole microphone thing all day in different committees, so this is about the right distance.
Yeah.
Right.
Perfect.
I'm Paul Evans, representing House District 20. I like to remind people in this particular situation that it is considered a battleground swingy district. And the reason I'm bringing this issue up, House Bill 3387, is because in that swingy district, you'd be surprised how many people actually are concerned about many of the issues that have been talked about by the committee today. In terms of background, since 1997 to current time, with the exception of times I had to spend overseas at war, I've been teaching communications at Portland State, at Chemeketa, at Western Oregon, and at places around. And I'm here to tell you that the folks, the adults that come into my classes for Comm 111, talking about the issues of the day, or at least being hopefully prepared to talk about the issues of the day, there has been a dramatic change in the last 15 years in terms of their overall knowledge of how government functions, how their communities function. So in the next several minutes, I'm just going to try to explain House Bill 3387, what it does, what it doesn't do, its rationale, and try to respond to some of the questions. First, 3387 is the most flexible bill I could, quite frankly, try to put together. It says the following, that there shall be a proficiency. Notice it does not say test, but a proficiency. There's three different options, a curriculum or a proficiency experience or a test. And it's linked to graduation. And here's why. Unlike the previous bill concept, I believe that if the state of Oregon is, in fact, supposed to be a democratic republic, if, in fact, we are investing in 12-plus years in terms of education, and if, in fact, we are expecting folks, once they are of voting age, to be responsible to make decisions that will affect not just their generation but other generations, it's fair to expect them to be able to do the job. And to me, a high school diploma means the public is saying you are ready to enter the work area, you're ready to be in society, you're ready to be a representative of our state, and I think that requirement of a civics proficiency determined by the school district that could be any number of things. It could be an experience. It could be part of the citizenship test. It could be an essay. It could be, again, whatever makes sense to the school district in the least impactful way. Again, taken as many times as necessary until they pass it, because the goal isn't to punish for failure. It's just to make sure that the information is put in a way that can be remembered, that is tied to a diploma, not a GED, not a modified diploma, but a diploma. And here's why. In a recent speech by Governor Brown, before she was governor, 36% of Oregonians, 36% of Oregonians know that income taxes actually have something to do with the services they receive. I'm not sure what the others think. 47% do not know how many U.S. senators or representatives we have. Now, again, I don't think stump the dummy questions like this are the most important piece, but if they don't have a baseline or at least a vocabulary of government, how are they going to understand larger concepts? The bigger question really is this. In World War II and after World War II, the United States, like other major powers, went through a huge economic challenge and decided, even though our process may be ugly and frustrating at times, that a republic is probably the better way to go. But it's based upon an understanding that we have something more in common than apart. We were able to work our way through a Great Depression. We were able to bring people together and fight and win a war on two fronts in 38 months. And we were able to build the greatest economy in human history, all because people recognized that we had something in it together. And in this age that we live now, where for all the right reasons, there's a lot of accommodations, a lot of distinct personalities, a lot of distinct communities, civics is the one thing that can try to bring people together. And if we aren't emphasizing civics, why are we not doing that? And I get it because of cost. I've been on the school board. I've been at the local government, been on budget committees. I understand the choices that are being forced upon districts to push and push and push for the reading and the writing and push and push and push for the math. I get that. But at the end of the day, we should also be publishing a report card on the civics piece, because at the end of the day, we are not only responsible to make sure that our workers can compete in the 21st century, and I think we do a pretty good job with workers, but we're supposed to make sure that they're able to maintain our government. And here's the fundamental question that I ask you to think about today. I know that finances are an issue. I'm not debating that. But I happen to believe that we continue to make bad decisions as a society and as a community because of uninformed people. I don't think generally most people make stupid decisions because they want to. Now, again, I come from Polk County, so maybe, you know, you could argue the fact. But the point is, I think most people, given the opportunity to know how things work, will choose the best options. And here's the key. At some point along the way, we decided that it was okay to dream small. It wasn't that long ago that we said we were going to go to the moon and back. It wasn't that long ago that we said we could figure out a way to send the Marine Corps and the Peace Corps and try to help people. And now we live in an age where there's $16 trillion in debt, I think, probably more, but at least that's what they said this morning. Poverty is on the rise. Our globe is in peril. And right now, today, in front of Congress, John Kerry, the guy who became famous for trying to fight the Vietnam War, is in front of Congress asking for a war declaration against ISIS. Now, here's what I mean by that. We have to make some really big choices over the next 10 to 15 years. We can't make those choices with citizens that aren't informed. So whether it's a proficiency test, whether it's an experience, whether it's new curriculum, whether it's, I don't know, robbing Phil Knight on the way to the bank to try to get money for civics, whatever it takes, we don't have the luxury of just letting this one go by. And I know I'm preaching to the choir on this, but at the end of the day, the question that we will be answering by our actions is whether we want a democratic republic or whether we're okay with just continuing the process because we think we don't have any other options. So I'll get off my little soapbox and I'll try and answer any questions you might have.
Okay, any questions?
Okay, yes, Representative
Hilfiger. Thank you, Madam Chair. So why not for the GED and the modified diploma?
Chair Doherty, Representative Hack, great question. Here's why. Again, in my attempt to make a bill that would not upset too many apple carts all at one time, and if I get to stay here for a few more years, I'll probably be upsetting some more. But in this particular bill, I think the easiest way to focus is on the group of folks who are trying to get down the diploma pathway. GED often has many other factors associated with timing and even in some cases where folks are getting the GED education. And on the modified diploma, because of special needs, I don't want to put any undue burdens on folks that it's just not fair to do. So I'm trying to focus on the quarter of a loaf I can try to focus on. Mm-hmm. Great question, though. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, other questions? I think mine's, I don't know if it's a question or a comment, but it's, I taught back in the days that this was a requirement.
Yes, ma'am.
And now my kids are all like 15 or years old, but.
You were 12 when you were teaching,
yeah,
Chair
yeah,
Doherty,
yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
But I think, you know, an observation of the sad thing is just on the street, ask how many adults. How many representatives do we have in the House? What do they do? And these sort of things. And again, I think part of it deals with passion. Part of it deals with, you know, not that high school kids just don't listen passionately about things, but I agree with you. I think civics is very important because civics means, you know, it's a community and everything else. But, you know, I'm hoping that this can be an inroad. I don't know if it solves the problem because I think if you ask many adults, actually the kids know more than the adults do, which is kind of sad, I guess. But anyway, that's what's going on.
Chair Doherty, if I could just follow up with that. You're absolutely right in that we always focus on the level of citizenship awareness that the students have. We also, I think, need to find ways to reengage adults.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, it is too easy to say, well, those kids don't know what they're supposed to know anymore. And we have so many big problems, we need all hands on deck.
Yep.
So I appreciate your comments very much. Thank you.
Representative Peluso.
Along those lines,
yes, ma'am.
I would just share that it is a Peluso family tradition that at Thanksgiving we all take the citizenship test.
Nice.
At our dinner table. And when you put the carrot of seconds out there, but I guess my point is there are so many ways to learn, and I got to tell you, those of us that are the older side of the family do struggle more than the younger, but creative learning, an opportunity to, you know, to connect it to something, to make it engaged, it's huge. And for us, like I say, it becomes very humorous as we make up answers, but
bottom line, I am the holder of the answer sheet. So, as the youngest in the family, but again, we do always end up with the right answer eventually. But I just throw out, I think it is so important, and as fast as our world is changing in the area of civics, it is a yearly thing that can happen, and I do support that it is part of a curriculum and that it is just vital for our replacements at these chairs.
Representative Sperry, then Representative Rudin.
So, thank you, Madam Chair, and ever so briefly, because there's frankly a lot of new members on this committee, there are different legislative organizations that we are a part of that actually have some curriculum, they have some things, and I got to tell you, and it's not everybody's thing, and that's fine, it's my thing. I'm in the schools on a pretty regular basis, or have kids on a pretty regular basis, and we can help be the teachers of that. And even if you don't want to make up your own goofy little stories like I do, there's curricula out there that you can just grab a hold of in a can, in a box, and very simple stuff. So there are things that we can actually do because I think we share a burden and a commitment and a passion that this is important. Important enough to give some time to of our own.
Very good. Representative Rubin.
Well, I absolutely agree. It's really important. I mean, we have to make sure that we leave a good legacy and have people that make even better decisions than we do. When you say civics curriculum, are you looking at the state's current curriculum, or are you thinking there would be some new curriculum that would evolve, or...
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, actually, I was trying to sidestep the curriculum question. I could say out of courage, but really out of the opposite of that. What my vision for this bill is that school districts can decide a test based on either the Secretary of State civics materials, Oregon Department of Education's materials, whatever the school district thinks is most appropriate for how they're approaching the problem. Because, again, to me, civics is not just the federal stuff, but the state, and really in Oregon, because we have so many local governments doing so many different types of things. In my mind, Metro may be a subject that's included in something like that if you're in the Portland area, but in other areas, perhaps water districts or fire districts or other things could be. So I'm really trying to make sure that the school boards that we elect to determine that the students graduating are getting the tools that they need to succeed, that they have ultimate flexibility in determining what that proficiency standard would be. And now, obviously, through a collaborative process, I would suspect that most of the materials would be very similar. I'm not advocating for rewriting curriculum. I'm really saying, to what Representative Springer was saying, that there is a lot of material out there, and that, let me put it this way. In the Air Force, when a general was coming to visit, we painted the grass green and the rocks white because it was a priority. I'm not sure civics is the priority yet that it should be because of all the other understandable factors. I think most people, most districts, actually have the tools to make a great civics proficiency process. We need to find the ability to help motivate and support those efforts.
Follow up. You were very careful to say proficient or civics process. Are you foreseeing a civics course being added to the curriculum?
Chair Doherty, Representative Reardon, I actually like what I saw on the ODE website and the Classroom Law Project in terms of curriculum. If it were me in Central School District 13J, there'd probably be a test that had some fill-in-the-blank, some true-false, some essay questions with relevance to the local functions within Polk County. That's kind of how I would put it together. Now, again, I think the school district should have flexibility. I suspect that there's baseline tests that the state probably already has that could be at least the 80% solution that then local districts could put stuff on top of. I just don't want to direct the best way.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, and I think just kind of finally, it's like everything. There's lots of things we want to do, but there's no time. Because you were saying something, I mean, 15, 20 years ago, you know, when I taught, we could have time.
Right.
But we can't do that anymore. Unfortunately, there's too many things that are on educators' plates and on the kids' plates that some of the things that are the most exciting for kids to do are not. There's no time during the day. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, we'll be happy to help out with that when we get to talking about assessments again. So,
Thank you. Thank you. Maybe Friday?
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much, Representative Evans. Okay, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3387 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2955. And it was 145 on the button. That's when we were supposed to start. So, Brian, if you could read what the bill is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2955 directs Department of Education to administer a process for providing funding for activities related to annual conference dedicated to Oregon Civics and held on Oregon Civics Day for teachers. Appropriates monies from the general fund to Department of Education for a purpose of conference. Declares emergency effective July 1st, 2015.
Okay, thank you. Now, Representative Hoyle was supposed to be here at 1:45. It's 10 seconds afterwards, but... Marilyn, would Marilyn and Barbara like to start, or do we want to recess until she gets here? What would you rather do?
Want to get started? No, I think we should go with our plan.
Okay. Thank you very much. Or whoever you want to bring up.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Barbara Rost. I'm the Program Director at Classroom Law Project. And joining me, I have a couple of teachers here. There'll be still another teacher and a couple of students. And SWEEP will be Marilyn Cover, our Executive Director. My job this morning is just to lay out what you're going to hear from all of these teachers and what this bill is about. And so we'll put the pieces of the puzzle in place for you. I'm going to tell you a little bit about what this bill does, why it's important, distinguish it from some of the other civics bills that you're hearing about today. And then we're happy to take your questions at the end of the testimony from my colleagues. So what this bill does is enhance professional development for teachers. You've heard a lot about civic education so far today in the first 45 minutes, and I think it's well recognized. I don't need to rehash the importance of it and why it's needed. But what we know at Classroom Law Project is that teachers need to renew what they learn about civic education frequently as well, and we're all about providing that professional development to them. So that's a little bit about this bill. Why it's important, I think you've identified why that's important. What's different about this bill from the other bills you're hearing about today is that this bill is about teachers. It's not about testing. It's not about kids. It's about helping teachers do what they do well even better. So with that, I'm going to have a high school teacher, Bob Bass from Roseburg, talk to us, elementary school, Nance Case from Beaverton, talk with you, and then another teacher we'll have talk with you is Karen Rouse from West Sylvan in Portland. So, Bob.
My name is Bob Bass. I was a teacher at Roseburg High School for 30 years. I'm now retired. I have been to this conference. And I found this conference to be invaluable. What was addressed earlier was the concept of federalism. Federalism may be the most complex issue for teenagers to understand. They don't really understand why there's a difference between a federal and state governments. Why can't just one do it? But this is a great conference for, first of all, connecting teachers with state-level issues, as well as the policymakers in Salem. It was cool. I mean, how cool is that for me, from Roseburg, to interface with a Supreme Court justice and discuss which First Amendment's freedom of speech protection is greatest, the U.S. Constitutions or Oregon Constitutions? It was an interesting dialogue I had with a Supreme Court justice. That doesn't happen. But being able to network with other teachers. Being down in Roseburg, most people in the Portland area don't realize which way Roseburg is, north or south. And so to me, being able to communicate with these policymakers, as well as the teachers that attend this conference, even some former students. Met a former student who was teaching in Pendleton. And that was awfully nice to see her come here. And she's teaching government, too. You know, that was real nice. Former colleague was teaching at a metropolitan high school up here in the Portland area. So these programs offer this service to teachers. I mean, it was addressed earlier about, well, we need to teach a passion of civics to students. It has to start with the teachers. And one of the things that I did from this conference is I developed a little pop quiz that I was doing in my class every day. I start every day with a five-question pop quiz.
Love pop quizzes.
Yeah. Well, this was two students. I just pulled two students up front and give them little placards and give them a multiple-choice question on the Constitution, you know, a direct reading of the Constitution, a literal quiz. And it was interesting for developing interaction between students, but also reinforced that to do well on this little pop quiz, all you have to do is read the Constitution, which was not easy for them anyway. But once we got through it over time, they got better at it. So, anyway.
Excellent, excellent. Now, before we go on to the other one, Representative Hoyle is here, who is the carrier of the bill. And so, Barbara, can you guys switch spots,
absolutely,
maybe? And then Representative Hoyle can do her thing.
And then
we'll bring you back. So, Representative Hoyle?
Sorry. No, thank you.
You know me, I start on time.
Yeah. And you know me, and I make an entrance.
Yes.
So,
welcome.
For the record, and thank you for letting me interrupt your panel. For the record, Val Hoyle, State Representative from House District 14, that's West Eugene and Junction City. I have three school districts in my district, so 4J in Eugene, Bethel, which has the highest graduation rate in all of Lane County, and also Junction City. So I am here to testify on House Bill 2955. I think that having exposure and education in civics is vitally important. I think every child in all parts of the state should have access to civics participation and engagement. This bill builds on an existing infrastructure, which I think is important. It doesn't set up a new program. It has a civics day for teachers. That's in its eighth year. It provides valuable professional development for teachers. And most importantly, this provides the specific funding to enable two teachers from each legislative district, 180 teachers total, to come to Salem for civics day. We are a citizens' legislature, and I know that when I was in high school, I participated in model government, and I was able to go to the Capitol. It was in New Hampshire, the other state without a sales tax, and also has a citizens' legislature. But we were able to go up there, and what it meant was that I learned that my voice mattered, and that I had access, and I understood government, understood, you know, had exposure and understood what the Constitution meant and how it applied to me, what the law meant, how it applied to me, but more importantly, that I had a voice. I think we need to support the teachers that are doing this work. I think we need to support students to have access to our government, and I want to thank you for listening to this bill today, and I would encourage your support.
Okay, thank you. Any questions of Representative Hoyle? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And thank
okay.
you.
So, Barbara, we will continue. And then when we finish with the panel, we'll ask questions of you, if we have any.
Good afternoon, Chair Daugherty and representatives of the committee. My name is Karen Rouse, and I teach language arts and social studies at West Sylvan Middle School, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2955. I've attended the conference many times, perhaps all eight, I'm not sure, but many times, and I will continue to attend. The conference feeds my desire to learn. It certainly heightens my passion for civics, and it also informs my instruction. Civics Day for Teachers has given me a familiarity and comfort with this building and with our elected officials that I can't imagine having received elsewhere. And it's because of that conference that every year that I teach eighth grade, which is every other year, I bring my students to the Capitol. You can look for us on April 1st. We'll be here. We meet with legislators. We attend hearings like this. We watch the House and Senate in action. We'll tour the Supreme Court. If not for the Civics Day for Teachers, I can't imagine that I would have the knowledge or gumption to be here right now. And certainly I would not have students coming to testify before you. And as you so eloquently mentioned, what other conference gives opportunity for civics educators to meet with Supreme Court justices, to meet with legislators? I've met many of you at the conference, Representative Frederick and Representative Springer, just this last year. My colleague Anna Wessinger recently told me, when I told her I was coming, she wanted me to say that this conference gives us a far deeper understanding of how our state government works, about Oregon's constitution, about how a bill really becomes a law in Oregon. We transfer that understanding to our students. Before I started attending this conference, I taught about U.S. government and the U.S. Constitution, and now my teaching of civics is always infused with a dose of Oregon government and Oregon Constitution. For instance, now when I teach about the Virginia Declaration of Rights, we pair that with Article 1 of the Oregon Constitution and look at what is similar in our respective Bill of Rights, from the very first Bill of Rights from Virginia to what we have in Oregon. I also have in your packet, you'll find a testimony written by my colleague Ann Larson, and she talks about a specific lesson that she learned and has from the conference a couple years ago, and that she uses in her class. It's quite inspiring what she wrote, so I hope you'll have the opportunity to read that. Quick word about the funding. The funding for this bill is really critical. In Portland Public Schools, they allow flexibility with how I spend my 3 professional development days, and so I am at liberty to spend it to come to this conference. But a lot of districts, mm-hmm. while they do fund professional development, they direct teachers, you have to spend it for this, either yeah. writing or math instruction. Mm-hmm. So they are not at liberty to use the professional development for this incredible opportunity. So the funding for this bill will enable those teachers to attend, because that will cover the substitute costs. So in closing, the conference is inspiring. It reinvigorates our passion for civics and how we teach it. So I do urge you to fully fund the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Nance Case, and I teach 5th grade at Terra Linda Elementary in the Beaverton School District there at Library right now. And no. You might think, well, a 5th grade teacher, what is she doing here? They're 10 and 11 years old. What are they doing with the Constitution? Well, ladies and gentlemen, they do a lot with the Constitution. They would blow you away. And if it weren't for this conference and the ongoing support and resource that I have, these wonderful people from the Classroom Law Project, like she just spoke to, I wouldn't have the gumption to sit here and address you, and I wouldn't dive so deep into the Constitution when I'm teaching my students. I came home from this conference one year and put on State versus Goldilocks. And that blew their little minds. They were just, you know, sign me up for law school. I'm ready to go. Forget about high school and college. Go to law school. And
may I ask who won?
Well, it depends. They introduced the concept of the evil twins.
Yes, you know. Okay.
Anyway, but then we, through the Classroom Law Project, they were able to arrange a courtroom tour for my students, and then to go into the courtroom of Federal Judge Anna Brown and sit in her jury boxes and pound her gavel. They're just become passionate little citizens. And they can speak to my 5th graders come May, end of May, after we put on our big hearing, and Marilyn and Barb will come and assist me with that. They will speak to how citizens demonstrate civic virtue. And they know that they've got to get out there, they've got to vote, they have to become informed, they have to vote, they volunteer, they perhaps run for offices, either small or large, and they have to go on jury duty. And they're passionate about it. Every year I get to go back to the middle school to take my 5th graders on a tour, and then I meet my former students who are now on student council at Cedar Park Middle School. So it really does have a beautiful trickle-down effect. And this is not a one-and-done conference. This is a conference that they are there for us, putting us together with other teachers, elected officials, finding that resource that I need in order to truly try to explain the Electoral College to my students, things of that nature. So this kind of funding would be money very well spent. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions of the panel Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. As I'm looking at the bill, it talks about providing funding, and as Representative Hoyle mentioned, too, from a legislative district for Civics Day, Oregon Civics Day for teachers. And I'm assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't want to assume, so the Classroom Law Project is the only choice for this, for Civics Day? Because as I'm putting the information together, it looks like this is the choice.
Madam Chair and Representative Springer, to answer that question at this point, yes, but I'd like to interject, we do have two students who would like to testify, and I'd also like to have Marilyn Cover, our executive director, up here. So if we could have a shift of who's in these chairs.
Okay. Well, we were just going to, while you guys testify. Were up here, we're going to see if we had any questions of these
specific
panelists. And any questions of these?
Follow-up?
Yep.
So will the students have something to add to that question? As far as what conferences we have in the state of Oregon that qualify?
No.
This is the only piece, the only conference available for Civics Day?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is the only conference. And what's truly unique about it, aside from it being the only one, Classroom Law Project was extremely deliberate in choosing to have this conference here in this building. Mm-hmm. We felt that that mattered, that it was really important for teachers to sit where they're sitting now, in these chairs, in these hearing rooms, to experience mm-hmm. what it's like to be here and to take that back to their classrooms. Additionally, there's a plenary session in the Senate chambers, and there's another session that's offered in the Supreme Court courtroom. So there's an opportunity here that touches many of the senses to invigorate teachers and inform them.
Okay, any more questions to this panel? Thank you very much for spending the time
and coming
testifying. It's always great to hear from teachers. Okay. So as Marilyn, and then as we have student one and student two, which is Jessica and Madeline.
And they're going to go first.
Okay.
I'll
and just make sure when you speak, you identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty and members of the committee. My name is Jessica Motley, and with me is Madeline Gochi. We are eighth graders at West Sylvan Middle School, and we are here today in support of House Bill 2955.
Jessica and I have been students of Ms. Rouse's class for the last 2 years. In that time, we've spent much more time learning about civics, government, and politics than our peers in other classes. We have done many extra units and activities, including a unit on the 2014 election and what it means to become an informed voter, a mock trial, and a unit on the forms of government and our responsibilities as citizens in our democracy. We've also been studying the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence in our We the People textbooks. We have learned concepts such as our natural rights, civic virtue, separation of powers, and the common good. While other classes in our school have access to this valuable resource, there are schools and students in Oregon who are not as lucky. Jessica and I are fortunate to have a teacher who is thoroughly educated on how to teach students civics and how they relate to our society. I have recently been accepted to become an honorary page under my local representative, Mitch Greenlick, and I know I never would have even thought to have looked for an opportunity like that without Ms. Rouse's input.
Just like Madeline said, the past 2 years have been informative and enriching as Ms. Rouse prepares us to become the educated citizens that we will one day need to be. I can speak for both of us when I say that this experience has been a fun one. I'm proud to say that I understand civics better than my parents do, and it wouldn't have been without this amazing opportunity. But this isn't just about understanding government better than my parents. It's about my future and the future of others. When we become eligible to vote, we have a choice about candidates and ballot measures that not only affect my future, but those of people who can't vote. It is therefore very important that we become educated voters and know where to find valid information and how to decipher biased campaigns. What better time to learn this than at a resilient young age when we are still forming our opinions? When asked what kind of government was made, Benjamin Franklin once said, "A republic, if you can keep it." How else will citizens be able to keep our republic unless they know what they are protecting? But with the funding of House Bill 2955, we will be able to create an educated future for Portland, Oregon, and the United States.
We would be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. Marilyn, do you have anything to say before we ask questions of the young ladies?
Madam Chairwoman, it's very hard to follow this really well-prepared presentation by these two students, so I'm a little taken away. But let me just say just a couple of things. One, you've heard from three teachers. If 180 teachers come to this conference, just think about the multiplier effect. They would be using new information not only with their existing students, but in many cases, they would be using it with their students for the next 30 years. So start doing the math of the number of kids that we can have an impact with if they have the opportunity to get this content. This bill is very simple, three parts. We're going to give teachers a chance with funding to get to the conference, put on an excellent conference here, and then provide the follow-up support, which can range from the support that Nance receives, for instance, with us helping with resource people, directly being supportive in the classroom, or doing regional workshops around the state of Oregon. I'll direct you in our packet just to the map of Oregon, which gives you blue dots where we've had teachers involved in our programs and red dots where we've been out doing workshops with teachers last year. This is the report from last year. We are trying to be a statewide organization with support from two teachers coming from each of the legislative districts. We would have many more dots on this map and cover the coast and other parts of the state in a way that we currently have not been able to reach. This conference is the spark for many teachers. It's their inspiration, and it's a chance for them to really realize that the Oregon Constitution is something that we need to look at. And by sitting in these chairs, in these rooms, visiting with members from the legislature, members of the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, this truly is an experience that goes beyond the Blue Book. Yes, the Blue Book's got lots of information in it, but this conference gives teachers the skills and the inspiration to go back to their classroom and do the kinds of things that these two young women have talked with you about. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Any questions of this panel?
I have one.
Yes, Representative McLean.
This is for the girls. Why is it important, and what would you say to your peers? Why is it important to be a citizen and someone who's involved?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, we believe that it's important to become involved in your community because you affect those who don't have the chance to do what you have the chance to do. It's important to know what you're going to be able to do when you get older, and how you can affect other people's lives, not just your own. It's about the common good.
That was wonderful.
Very
and good answer.
Good answer. Good answer.
Good answer.
Okay, any other questions? No, actually, I'm very impressed. Oh, go ahead. Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Chair Doherty. Thank you, both of you, for being here. I am not surprised. I've gotten a chance to be part of this, the Classroom Law Project, and you are joining a long list of impressive students that I've met during that time, and I really want to thank you again for coming in and doing this. Now just keep talking about it with as many places as possible. Marilyn, I have a question for you, if possible. The concern that I have, and I've seen it, is that we haven't been able to branch out to a number of schools. How do we do that? Because in many of those low-income schools that right now are being told that their primary task is to raise math scores and reading scores and not have the time to do any of this kind of work. Those teachers are under that kind of pressure. They're not being given any sort of additional support to get out to do that. And especially when you're dealing with, in the Portland area, the K-8 system, which does not have a middle school component to it. How do we get to those folks? And are you thinking about that in this whole process?
Madam Chair, Representative Frederick,
You raise a very troubling and challenging issue, and we continue to reach out to those schools and work through in Portland Public Schools, AVID, and a number of the new IB programs that are being started in those K-8s as a way to try to reach some of those students. There's certainly through those programs ways to do more interdisciplinary programs, and so the social studies is getting taught a little bit more across the curriculum. It's a tough issue when people are holding people's feet to the fire to show how they're doing on math and reading scores to give them time enough to do this. Now, if I get the chance to teach reading, I'm going to be pulling from a lot of social studies mm-hmm. places. I'm not going to just read boring, you know, literature. And we're going to have conversations about public issues, and we're going to read the news, and we're going to talk about those things. And so we would have a chance to do more civics. And so to the extent that I can convince people that they can still score well in literacy by talking about these other issues, but it's not an easy sell. Language arts teachers, I'll never forget having someone say to me, well, we don't score on the accuracy of the responses. We're only worried about the functions. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, if we're going to all the trouble of having a great reading or writing assessment, someone should be reading it for its accuracy as well, not just that they wrote it really well. Mm-hmm. But
well, thank you. One quick follow-up. And this is more a comment than a question to you. This is why I did not act as the judge this year. I appreciate that. Mostly because every time I looked out at the audience in the past, I saw my neighbors and the parents waving at me going, yeah, that's Susie. Yeah, you know, remember when she was born? Yeah, no, please. So, but the real problem I have is that there are a lot of kids and parents and teachers who would be really interested in this, right, do not have the option. And they do not have the option because of the school that they're in and the fact that they're told that they've got to get the kids ready for test preparation, et cetera. West Sylvan is a fine school. My son taught out there at one time. But that's not the case at King necessarily, or at Humboldt, or not Humboldt, no longer exists, but at Beach or at all these other schools. So this is the concern, and I would ask very simply that you try to find the path so that we can get those folks to this program and be involved in it.
Thank you.
Barbara.
Madam Chair and Representative Frederick, if I might add to Marilyn Cover's response, part of what we're hopeful about with this bill, you recall the element that every legislative district gets to bring two teachers. And so we're hopeful that in some of those schools who haven't paid much attention to what Classroom Law Project offers, that they'll look at this. Perhaps you might write a letter saying, we invite two teachers from your district. And giving it that kind of importance enters into a new light, casts a new light on it that might cause teachers, administrators to look at it differently or to look at it again or just to look at it mm-hmm. where they might not have looked at the email from Marilyn or me. And so we're hopeful that with that element, it may capture some of that. It certainly won't address all of it. And we continue to work on those issues of getting not only the schools that you describe in Portland Public Schools, but many rural schools fit in the mm-hmm. same kind of category that what you're describing. And we're working hard continuously at reaching them.
Well, although Grant High School is not officially in my district, my kids attended Grant High School. And I consider it one of the primary high schools in my district, Grant and Jefferson. It is, of course, this year's winners of the and I'm very proud of that. Now, those Lincoln folks who are listening to me, too bad.
It's Grant's year.
I've praised Lincoln in the past, so I appreciate that they know about it in some cases.
Yes,
but they do not We do not have connections, and we need to try to find to do that. Thank you.
Indeed.
Any other questions of the panel? Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, thank you. Addressing our two young witnesses here, obviously you're very excited about the Constitution because it's the owner's manual and it belongs to you. And I can see that you're very excited about that. We've been looking at some bills today that makes an assumption that for one reason or another, young people in our state are really not engaged like you are on this particular subject. I guess the question here is, if given the opportunity, how many of your peers do you think would be as excited as you are about civics, the government, our Constitution? How many would be excited if they were able to catch a vision for this?
Chair Doherty and Representative Wilson, I know that when Jessica and I today and yesterday announced that we were coming to the state capitol, a lot of people were excited for us, but not necessarily wishing that they were in our place.
Because they wanted to stay in school.
Yes. And so I know this also comes back to the teaching element of it. And I know that in my middle school years, I've had both my sixth grade and my seventh and eighth grade teachers have been very active in trying to get us to do activities in which we're also engaged as well as learning. And so I feel like with these teachers and with their teaching elements, then more of our or my peers and their students would be willing to learn more about the Constitution and do these kind of opportunities rather than students who are in teachers who don't necessarily teach the same way, maybe don't make it as much of an interesting topic.
Adding on to what Madeline was saying, I remember last year when we did mock trial, it was the only thing we would look forward to in the day. Everyone was always ready to come up with some new question to ask a witness or try to put on a new character or a new side of the character they hadn't seen before. And when it came to the time we actually did the mock trial, it was like you could feel the excitement in the air. Everyone was ready to get their professional attorney sort of pose on, and everyone was ready to do what we'd seen in TV shows and in the movies, except we were the ones doing it, and everyone was excited that kids actually got an opportunity to do this. And I know I've talked about it with some of my friends at other curricular activities, and they've always thought it's a really cool opportunity, but their teachers haven't been able to go to a conference like this, and so they haven't gotten the same experience. And I think that most kids would benefit from it because not many know about civics or government.
Well, I'd like to thank you for coming here today. It's thrilling to see young people who realize the importance of Franklin's statement about the republic and the whole issue that you've got to keep it. You've got to work to keep it. And so thank you for realizing that and caring about that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, Representative Reardon, did you want to say?
Just a quick comment. I'm sorry I wasn't here to hear all of it. I was off doing my civic duty elsewhere. But I'm glad you were talking about mock trials. If you're around Representative Williamson very long, you may get recruited into helping judge the mock trials. And I had that experience twice. Amazing, just amazing. Makes you really feel very good about the future of the state when you hear those kids, young people, pardon me. So I'm glad I was able to be part of your experience. It's great.
Hey, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What grade are you ladies in? It's okay.
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, we're both in eighth grade.
Okay. So between your junior and senior year, you can do girls state. My son did boys state. It's a pretty amazing, phenomenal experience.
Yes. So and later on, you can be up here as elected officials. Okay, any other questions or comments? Actually, I'd just like to, again, thank you guys for doing it. It's the one thing with the teachers up here, we go, this is what we miss, are the kids. So anyway, we appreciate you being here. And if there are no other questions, who are excused, thank you very much.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay, we have no one else signed up for this House bill. Anybody else? Okay, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2955. And actually, we're going to stand at ease for a few minutes.
Yeah.
So we're going to we are now no longer at ease. We are whatever the opposite of that is.
Attention.
Yes, we're ill at ease now. Okay.
They had a barn.
With this, I would like to open a work session on House Bill 2847. And Richard, if you want to go over what we are doing.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2847 requires Aspire programs to annually provide financial aid and instruction to high school students. The committee heard this bill on February the 27th. The fiscal impact statement came back for this bill, and it is in the SMS packet that's on the dais. It came back with a fiscal impact, and so should go to Joint Committee on Ways and Means. If there are questions, we actually have somebody in the audience who's willing to answer.
And we do have a question. Representative Springer, sir, if you want to come up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think my question's pretty simple, and it's better if I look at the right bill. What's the reason for the fiscal?
Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, thank you. For the record, my name is Bob Brew. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Student Access and Completion, also known as OSAC. For those of you unfamiliar with the Aspire program, we're a highly decentralized program. We have small central staff, and in the 145 sites where we provide services, we do a partnership grant with the schools. So the site coordinator is basically paid a small stipend, and works at the school or community-based organization with a whole cadre of volunteers. So currently we have one half-time training professional who works with all of those site coordinators and all those volunteers. This with the addition of this new requirement, we've asked to increase that training person to full-time from half-time. And this also anticipates an upcoming bill that we would be increasing our number of sites from 145 to 200 sites. So this would support that expansion as well.
Follow up. Thank you for that answer, Bob. I admit I'm confused. I've taken the training online. I've worked with an advisor at the an advisor at the school. I was the mentor, whatever that is, whatever our titles are. And the conversation about talking about the cost of college is already embedded in the information that exists. And if it were not already embedded in that information, I would think you'd be able to say and talk about the cost of education on a subsequent slide. And certainly it was something that I hammered with all of my students a lot. I admit I'm struggling to see why there needs to be additional FTE, albeit only 0.5, to add that language to, in essence, what is a PowerPoint as far as the training. I sat at the dining room table and I flipped through the PowerPoint. What is, in essence, that and documents, hardbound documents, not hardbound, hard copy documents that I looked at.
So thank you, Chair Doherty, Representative Springer. I have to admit that I pushed for the addition of this half FTE. Our Aspire coordinator, Lori Ellis, said, oh, no, we can do this with the staff that we have. And I said, no, we need to get this right, because if we're being required to give accurate, timely information on an ever-evolving federal loan program, I think that the standard of accuracy, timeliness, and so on is higher, and I believe that our staff is stretched too thin. However, I defer to you, Representative, if you feel that the existing education is sufficient.
Follow up. Okay. I think we all know I'm a big Aspire cheerleader. I think it's a great program, and I think students get a huge bang for the taxpayers' buck. Huge.
And the language in the bill talks about each year the program shall provide, the additional language is very brief, shall provide financial aid instruction to high school students and their family. This instruction may be conducted in conjunction with existing instruction or independently. A lot of schools are already doing that. Mm-hmm. College knowledge nights. So I think, again, we're back to that being embedded in the information to talk about, to encourage students to either go to the college knowledge or, like I said, I baited parents to come and talk. I just don't know if that makes sense to me, quite frankly.
Okay. Representative Spring, would this be something that you'd feel better carrying over this bill as opposed to working it, sending it to Ways and Means and talk to the gentleman, or what would you prefer? Because we were going to pass it with a do-pass recommendation to Ways and Means, joint
Ways
and Means.
Well, first of all, I don't think... My name's not on the bill. Okay, so I'm not... It's not my bill, okay? Representative Johnson is the one who brought this bill.
Oh, my name's on there, too.
And this is your bill, Madam Chair.
And mine, too.
No.
No, it's...
Keep that in mind.
Oh, okay, yeah, your name's on there, too. Is mine?
Not yet.
No, so in all seriousness, Madam Chair, with that in mind, I don't want to make unilateral decisions for someone else, but I would love to hold it over and have this discussion about the cost of this, because frankly, things go to Ways and Means and die oftentimes. Yeah. Whether I sit there or not, they go and they die. And I would hate for this to be sent somewhere to die.
Okay, so we can, why don't we carry it over? And then
and
you can have a discussion.
And I'll chat with Representative Johnson.
Okay. Do I need to make a motion for that? Or?
That's it.
I've just done that. It has been carried over.
So when we carry it over, will we have another broader discussion on other things that might concern us about it? Or do you want
about
to hear those
the bill?
Now?
No, it would just be on the cost. Okay. We already had a public hearing, so we've gone into a work session.
Okay.
So
next time we get to talk about this, though?
It would only talk about the fiscal.
Okay.
Yeah. The fiscal on it. Okay.
Anybody can call me anytime.
That's right. Okay, so we're going to be carrying this over to whenever we carry it over to. And so I am going to close the work session on House Bill 2847 and open up a work session on House Bill 3299. Okay, if you can explain it again.
Thank you
very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3299 appropriates monies from the general fund to the Department of Ed for state school fund distributions made for the purpose of developing and implementing marijuana abuse prevention curricula and public information programs. It does a couple other things. The committee has been asked to move this measure to the Joint Committee on Measure 91 for policy consideration there. The committee does not yet have fiscal and revenue impact statements, so any work session today would require a suspension of the rules.
Okay. So we need to have a motion to suspend the rules.
Chair Doherty, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on HB 3299 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Okay. Representative Frederick moves the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 3299 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time. There's no discussion. The motion is undebatable. So those of the opinion that the rules will be suspended for the purpose of taking action on House Bill 3299 without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time will say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. Okay, the motion carries and the rules have been suspended.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 3299 without recommendation as to passage to the Joint Committee on Measure 91, then to the Committee on Revenue, and then to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Oh, my Lord.
Da-dum-dum-dum.
That thing is going to just have a terrible...
Okay, Chair Frederick moves House Bill 3299 without recommendation as to passage to the Joint Committee on Measure 91. Then to the Committee on Revenue, and then to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion?
Not
Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I am on the Measure 91 Committee. Could I look at this and see if I want to accept it or not?
No.
Okay.
Is that part of the discussion, or I might rule that it's undebatable?
We're good.
It
will take it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Any other further discussion? Okay, seeing none, if the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Brado?
Aye.
Representative Pat?
Aye.
Representative
McLean?
Yes.
Representative
Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Gordy?
Aye. Okay, the motion passes and the measure is sent to Joint Committee on Measure 91. Okay, with that concludes our business for the day. So I adjourn that. Okay, with that concludes our business for the day. So I adjourn.